Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I was really unwell November, December 2021, and I was going back and forth to the GP, and the GP weren't sure what it was. They were kind of diagnosing me with glandular fever. They thought it could have been like a various things. And then on the 7th of January, I was diagnosed with lupus. I could speak, but I was just kind of frozen there. So obviously he then called my parents, and then I got taken straight to A&E. Upon getting to A&E, they took me straight for a CT scan. They were really fast, to be fair. So yeah, I got taken straight to CT. They basically confirmed it, but I had to wait for an MRI, and the MRI machine was down on that day. So I had to wait a long time for my MRI, and I was just kind of sat there waiting. It was just kind of real kind of confusion, things like that. So then afterwards, I then got moved to a stroke ward. I don't remember the first kind of 4 days. I was texting my friends a load of rubbish. I think I was fully conscious, but I don't know if my brain's blocked it out or I don't know. But I don't really remember then. They didn't actually know what had caused my stroke. So they were debating, was it meningitis? They were debating, was it a fungal infection? I was on so many antibiotics. They were like pumping them into me just in case. And they still don't really 100% know what caused my stroke. They think it was the lupus, and the likelihood is it was the lupus.
Hello, I'm Mark Goodyear, and this is Stroke Stories, the podcast that seeks out and hears from stroke survivors. Today we hear from Carrie Davis from Carmarthen. Carrie was just 23 when she suffered her stroke.
So I was just qualified as a primary school teacher. So I just started in my second year of teaching, and I was really enjoying it when the stroke happened. And as well, I enjoyed doing things like kayaking, surfing, swimming. I was, real water baby. So I really enjoyed doing all that. So family was my mum, my dad, brother and sister, and then Jack, my partner. And they've all been amazing. Fair play to them. I was really unwell November, December 2021. And I was going back and forth to the GP, and the GP weren't sure what it was. They were kind of diagnosing me with glandular fever. They thought it could have been like a various things. And then on the 7th of January, I was diagnosed with lupus. So my stroke was caused by the lupus attacking my brain and basically resulting in a bleed in the brain. When I first kind of had the stroke, I'd had a period of like 2 hours the Sunday before where I couldn't remember anything. And that was really frightening. Obviously, I still don't remember that, those 2 hours, even now. And then on the Tuesday before, so the stroke was on the Wednesday, on the Tuesday, I was just kind of dragging my foot. I kept pressing the M when I was trying to text people on my phone. I kept pressing the M for some bizarre reason. Obviously, I know now that, you know, that was a precursor to the stroke. But at the time, I just put it down to the lupus because I'd been so unwell. It just felt like it was the lupus, and just, you know, all the out-of-hours doctors and stuff, I called them, obviously, to, like, you know, report my symptoms. And they all said, it's probably just a lupus, brain fog, don't worry about it. And then the Wednesday morning, I woke up quite early, and it was about 6. And I made it to the toilet, and then I was stuck. And then I remember my partner, Jack, coming and knocking the door and being like, come on, I need to go to work. And I could speak, but I was just kind of frozen there. So obviously he then called my parents. And then I got taken straight to A&E. Upon getting to A&E, they took me straight for a CT scan. They were really fast, to be fair. So yeah, I got taken straight to CT. They basically confirmed it, but I had to wait for an MRI. And the MRI machine was down on that day. So I had to wait a long time for my MRI. And I was just kind of sat there waiting and getting more and more kind of disorientated and confused. And I was talking rubbish, apparently. I don't remember it. But yeah, it was just kind of real kind of confusion, things like that. So then afterwards, I then got moved to a stroke ward. I don't remember the first kind of 4 days. I was texting my friends a load of rubbish. I think I was fully conscious, but I don't know if my brain's blocked it out or I don't know. But I don't really remember then.
Carrie spent a month in hospital.
They didn't actually know what had caused my stroke. So they were debating, was it meningitis? They were debating, was it a fungal infection? I was on so many antibiotics. They were like pumping them into me just in case. And they still don't really 100% know what caused my stroke. They think it was the lupus, and the likelihood is it was the lupus, but I'm still not 100% sure, and I wouldn't put my life on it. They kind of did explain it, but because I was like very anxious at this point, because obviously my health anxiety was through the roof because I'd just been through like something as traumatic as a stroke, they kind of just give a kind of overview to why, but they didn't really go into the details. Whereas perhaps now I'm in a better position to hear, you know, the reasons why and what caused it exactly and where it was in my brain, because I still don't know. I've seen my MRI. My physio showed me the MRI, which was, yeah, it was crazy to see. You know, there was that much blood on my brain. It kind of explained it all. But yeah, I think it went in the hospital because I was, you know, so anxious. I think they just kind of gave a really brief overview. So when I was on the ward, there was COVID as well, obviously. So they decided to stop visiting. So they'd been really lenient with me. They'd allowed my mum to come in pretty much all day, every day, because I was just so upset. I was just an emotional wreck in a hospital bed, basically. So they were really good and they allowed my mum to come in and stuff. Obviously, it took about 3 weeks for my leg to move. So I was being hoisted in and out of bed and things. And I, you know, obviously thinking, like, I don't know if my kind of the feeling or the movement will ever return, and kind of just not knowing is just horrific, because you're thinking to yourself, am I going to be, you know, bedbound? Am I going to be in a wheelchair? Am I going to be walking with the city? You know, all possibilities kind of cross your mind. When I was there, it took about 3 weeks before the first kind of movement returned to my leg. So I was just kind of, I could move it a little bit on the first day, and then the second day I could move it a little bit more. And I was so happy. I was just overjoyed, because that meant that there was some movement, and that meant that hopefully, you know, it would continue and I'd be able to walk and things. So as soon as that came and I had that movement, I kind of started on like the physio's journey with the OTs and the physios. So they had been seeing me before, but just to kind of get me sat up and things like that, because the stroke had affected the midline, I think it's called, in your brain. So I couldn't, my balance was gone. I couldn't even sit up on the side of a bed because my balance was just appalling at that point. But yeah, so I started then on physio. So I started walking, you know, slowly with help, walking literally the length of a bed and back, the length of a bed and back. And I just kept practicing that. And I think I had about a week and a half to 2 weeks of that kind of physio. And then, yeah, COVID hit the ward. So they stopped the visiting. And once that happened, I obviously got even more upset than I kind of would have been anyway, because obviously my mum and seeing Jack and my dad had been so like important to me. It was just like they'd just basically taken away kind of the only thing that was keeping me going. So I went out for a physio session, and when I came back, I think it was decided that more because of my mental health, really, that they decided that I could go home because it was obviously impacting my mental health really badly at that point. So I was able to walk, you know, probably 10 foot maybe, and I was allowed home. And yeah, being home was just like it just made me so much better because I could push myself. So I remember the first kind of few months I was walking with a stick indoors, but using a wheelchair when I went out and about. And then slowly over time, you become more confident. So I'd take a few, you know, steps outside. And then after that, then I'd kind of walk when I was outside. I kind of ask somebody to hold my stick, but to be there in case I needed to grab them. So I just kept building up really, really slowly like that. And it did take months. And I'm still a little bit off balance. And, you know, I'm still not 100%. I'm still at like a stage of like, I describe myself as basically I'm like a fully grown 18-month-old in my walking because I'm not 100% there with my balance and things, and it doesn't take much to knock me off balance. But I am walking and I'm able to walk without an aid, without a stick or anything. So that's obviously, yeah, been amazing. And then I had to obviously relearn to walk up the stairs. So when I was first let out of the hospital, I couldn't walk up and down stairs. So my dad had to really quickly make a bathroom on the same floor. Luckily, we had one bedroom that was kind of on the same floor as like the living room. So I swapped bedrooms with my brother. So I slept in his bedroom and he slept in mine because obviously I couldn't walk up and down the stairs. So yeah, at first it was really hard because I was just confined to those, like the living room, his bedroom and the bathroom, and that was it. And like people would have to go down to the kitchen to get me food and things like that. But obviously with time, I did relearn to walk, you know, up and down the stairs with physio and stuff. The only thing is like my arm. So I was right side affected. It was my dominant arm, and it still unfortunately isn't back to what it was. Or well, I can't really use my hand at all. I can sort of move my arm, but yeah, I've just had to, you know, learn to adapt basically, and you know, relearned how to, like, I've done kayaking again with like a glove from Active Hand, which basically means that my hand is basically taped to the paddle, and that's allowed me to get back kayaking. I still love sea swimming. Still love swimming, to be fair. And yeah, so I've learned to adapt. I think, you know, people always say, oh, you're so strong, and oh yeah, you're amazing. But it's just like, what choice did I have? It was either get better or just, I don't know, be stuck as I was, bedbound with, you know, like so upset. And so it wasn't really a choice for me. It was kind of just get better.
Coming up, Carrie talks about using Facebook to connect with other survivors.
The Facebook group was just, yeah, it was really, you know, it's such a positive kind of place because it's all about celebrating small wins. And we're all in a different kind of position. We've all had different strokes, obviously, and we're all individuals, but it doesn't matter because, you know, some people might be cognitively affected, some people are more physical, but it doesn't matter because the small wins that everybody gets are all celebrated equally.
And she talks about her progress.
I can pretty much do anything that I used to be able to do. It just takes a little bit more kind of adapting and more time. But like, as I said, that's kind of developed my patience and things. So yeah, I kind of take a slower pace at life now. I'm kind of happy with my kind of, I'm just ambling about, and I can just go about, you know, life and just carry on as normal. And yeah, it's been massive.
Let's hear how Carrie got involved with local stroke charities.
I found different strokes not long after my stroke, which they're amazing because they obviously support younger stroke survivors. Because I just think everybody thinks that strokes only happen to old people. And I, to be fair, I did think that before the stroke. I didn't, you know, I hadn't heard of anybody my age that had had a stroke. So I think it's just that they have been really amazing. They've got like a befriending service. So I spoke a lot with some of the kind of younger stroke survivors that they have volunteering for them. I also spoke on the phone with one lady from there. And it's just, yeah, they were just so amazing, because it's just when you have a stroke at this age, the chances are you don't know anybody that has also had a stroke. Well, you know, you might know one other person, or kind of you vaguely know had something, but you don't know the kind of ins and outs, and you're not kind of best friends with that person. It's not something that happens to all that many people, but it still does happen. So when I first had stroke, it was really lonely and really isolating, and I was just kind of desperately trying to find somebody who had had similar at a similar age. And yeah, different strokes kind of provided like the opportunity to meet so many kind of people, and their Facebook group was just, yeah, it was really, you know, it's such a positive kind of place, because it's kind of, it's all about celebrating small wins, and we're all in a different kind of position. We've all had different strokes, obviously, and we're all individuals, but it doesn't matter, because, you know, some people might be cognitively affected, some people are more physical, but it doesn't matter, because the small wins that everybody gets are all celebrated equally. So yeah, so that's been really, really good. And I've met a few people, or a lot of people actually, on Instagram. So I do speak with them, you know, and it's so nice to have people that can kind of relate to you and know exactly what it is you're going through. Because as much as friends and family try to understand, I think it's impossible for them to fully understand what it is you're going through, you know, unless they've been through it themselves. That's the only kind of, the only insight they have is, you know, the information you give, and they don't, you know, they don't live in your brain. They have no idea how you're feeling or anything like that. So yeah, I've really kind of enjoyed getting to know people on Instagram.
Carrie is happy with how she's feeling.
Yeah, I'm feeling really well now. I'm feeling really positive. I feel a lot like I've learned a lot from the stroke. I've learned a lot about patience, because obviously now I have to be patient. I'm just kind of more positive in my outlook and towards life and stuff, because it's like the little things, they don't matter anymore. You know, when people worry about trivial things and, you know, things at work and things like that, it ultimately doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is your health and your happiness. And that has been kind of a real mindset shift for me anyway, because obviously before I used to get very stressed about work, and I used to be kind of worried about, you know, doing everything, and I should stay late at work every night. And now I'm kind of like, well, not what's the point, but there are bigger things to worry about in life. And I think it just changes your perspective massively, because obviously now you've been through something that potentially could have, you know, killed me. It's kind of just changed my perspective. But yeah, I feel really positive, because I just feel like I've relearned to do pretty much everything apart from cooking, which I can do. But the only thing is it can be frustrating sometimes when you can't like chop things like you used to, or can't open packets like you used to. But other than that, I can pretty much do anything that I used to be able to do. It just takes a little bit more kind of adapting and more time. But like, as I said, that's kind of developed my patience and things. So yeah, I kind of take a slower pace at life now. I'm kind of happy with my kind of, and just ambling about, and I can just go about, you know, life and just carry on as normal. And yeah, it's been massive, this whole kind of the stroke and everything. It's just, it's been, you know, I did have, you know, a real period of like depression afterwards, and you know, my mental health was really, really poor. But with like therapy and getting a puppy also helped. They kind of, I feel a lot more kind of happier now. And I've gone back to work. I'm not a teacher anymore, but I'm a teaching assistant, which again is suitable for me now. You know, who's to say I won't go back to teaching? I don't know. I've just kind of taken a teaching assistant post just to get myself back into work, and I'm really enjoying it. And yeah, it's just, I think that it's just changed everything, but I try not to focus too much on the negatives. I try to focus on the positives of the stroke as opposed to the negatives.
And finally, Carrie has advice for other stroke survivors.
My advice to a stroke survivor would be just don't give up, because we all kind of, we as stroke survivors all know how difficult it is and how, you know, negatively it can affect your mental health and the kind of all the negative side of it. We all kind of, we've all felt that. So I'd say, you know, reach out to people that have been through similar, you know, join groups, you know, speak to people on social media, because they honestly make all the difference, and they can, they can't necessarily make your mental health better and, you know, make you kind of okay with it, but hearing about people's stories of people that are 10 years on, or people that are 5 years on, or people that are just a year on, or people that are 6 months on from where you are, it can really kind of, you think, oh, okay, they've managed to do that, so who's to say I can't do that in, you know, in 6 months or in a year or in 5 years. So I'd say definitely reach out and just keep trying. Like yesterday was the first time I managed to put my hair up by myself in 20 months since the stroke, and I was just so, so pleased. And it was just, it was only a small win, but to me it felt massive. And I put that on the different strokes group, and the amount of support and the amount of people that have said, oh, where do you get your, you know, the bobble from, or where do you get things from, or how do you do it? And I've been able to just say, and now hopefully they'll go on and they'll be able to do it, you know, do something similar. So yeah, it's just, I just say, just, yeah, don't give up, and just reach out as much as you need to other people who've been through the same, because we've all been there. We've all been kind of through this horrible, horrific, traumatic brain injury. But I think that together we can kind of support each other and look out for each other.
Carrie's stroke came after a long period of health issues, and she had to spend a significant amount of time in hospital recovering. She's now home and doing well, and also back at work in the classroom. Thank you for listening to Stroke Stories. Please do share this episode with anybody you think it might help. And if you are, or you know of, a stroke survivor, and there's a story you can share, get in touch via X or Instagram. Our DMs are open. The Stroke Stories podcast was produced by Aidan Judd. I'm Mark Goodyear. Thank you for listening.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Tsunis.
I'm Kayla Tsunis, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.